to the official podcast for St. Philip's Episcopal Church in Rochester, Michigan. You can learn more about our church at our website, stpfeeds.org. Our Sunday services are at 8 and 10 a.m., and all are welcome. This podcast is the sermon for Sunday, March 26, 2017, the fourth Sunday in Lent, by the Reverend Eric Williams.
One thing I do know, that I was blind and now I see. The story of the blind man is one of those stories that we hear in John's Gospel that reveals something amazing about Jesus, something remarkable. In this case, Jesus heals a blind man. Now, this blind man had been sitting in this same spot for years. He had been born blind, and the only profession that he could really do as a blind person was to beg. And so day after day, week after week, year after year, people would come and walk past, or in some cases, over this man. And yet, interestingly, none of them can recognize him. None of them knows his name. He is invisible to them, a category that they have dismissed and overlooked and been blind to. The irony, of course, in the story is that the really blind people in the story are not the man who was literally blind, but the Pharisees who are spiritually blind. They can't see this blind man, nor can they see Jesus for who he is. Their minds are really obsessed with categories. Jesus can't be a prophet because he is not staying within the rules and the boundaries that they have learned as teachers of the Jewish law. This man can't be the blind man because nobody can heal a blind man, and so it must be an imposter. Their expectations have prevented them from seeing. Recently, I read a study that was done by a psychologist who is interested in how the mind perceives things. And so they did a little test. It was kind of a tricky test on a group of radiologists. And these radiologists were told that they were to review some slides, some x-rays, and to see if they could spot anything that might be potentially cancerous. The trick was that the people doing the study had inserted a picture of a gorilla in the x-ray. So it's the x-ray of a lung, and they had put a little picture of a gorilla in there, and not a tiny gorilla. It was about maybe 20 times or so bigger than an average cancerous node would be. How many of those radiologists do you think noticed the gorilla? Any guesses? Zero? It was about 17% noticed the gorilla. 83% of the radiologists did not see the gorilla. Why do you think that's so? They weren't looking for it, right? They were looking for what they expected to see. And so anything that they didn't expect to see, they didn't see. This kind of flies in the face of what we kind of imagine and think. We think that we are objective people, that we see the world as it is. We see it, our eyes take in the information, and we can rationally decide what we see and what we don't see. But study after study, this is not the only study, study after study shows that in fact we see what we are preconditioned to see. We perceive what we are expecting to perceive. This to me is helpful in understanding this story. Or think about our Old Testament lesson, the great prophet Samuel, who had anointed Saul, the very first king of the people of Israel. And now God said, for a whole variety of reasons, that Saul had been rejected. It's a great story about how Saul lost his kingship. But now God has appointed Samuel to anoint a new king. And we learn in the story that Samuel is grieving over Saul. Samuel is still hung up on Saul, the first king that he anointed. And so when he goes to anoint a new king, what do you think are the attributes that he is looking for? Saul's. He's expecting another Saul. And so when he goes to Jesse's family, he misses completely what God is doing. God is doing something new, but Samuel cannot see it. Even Samuel, a great prophet, cannot see the new thing that God is doing. For I do not look as mortals look, says God, for they look with the outward appearance, but I look on the heart. And so God chooses David, the youngest, the unlikeliest son, to become king. We too, I think, struggle to see clearly what God is doing. We struggle just as the Pharisees and just as Samuel did with all kinds of obstacles that prevent us from seeing and comprehending the amazing things that God is doing. Sometimes our eyesight is colored or shaded by the messages that we receive as children. Your vestry and I went over the last month or so to trainings by a group called, ironically, Visions, Visions Incorporated, which has been asked by the diocese to help us to overcome implicit biases in our thinking, to welcome and experience diversity in all of its forms. And it's been really helpful for me anyway to kind of process, what are the messages that I learned? How do I prejudge people unconsciously based on the way I was raised, based on categories which may or may not have anything to do with the real person? How can I begin to acknowledge those and set them aside and to see other people for who they really are? It's a challenge. Our minds, I think, are created to come up with categories. It helps us to make sense of the world, to divide into categories. But those very categories can prevent us from seeing the richness and wonder of God's creation. Sometimes we miss the gorilla because we're looking for cancer. So what can we do? How can we see as God sees? How can our eyes be opened and more aware of the reality that sometimes is all around us? I remember when my older daughter was very young. I think she was about two and or three, I guess she was. And Susan was pregnant with our younger daughter. We took a trip to the Grand Canyon. We were visiting Susan's father and stepmother, and we brought the family to the Grand Canyon, and we were trying to show Margaret the Grand Canyon. We're walking along this pathway, and on one side, there's just some trees and some small boulders and rocks, and on the other side is this amazing vista, one of the most amazing wonders of the world. What do you think Margaret was interested in? The little rocks on the other side. No, Margaret, come look over here. She had no framework to understand how amazing the Grand Canyon was. To her, what was more appealing was what she could see and touch, what was close to her. The Grand Canyon meant nothing to her. It was could have been a TV screen, but those little rocks were fascinating. And when I looked with her, I saw those little rocks were pretty fascinating. There was wonder in them as well. Now, over time, of course, our minds get opened. But I believe that so often we miss the miracles all around us because we're not able to comprehend them. We don't have the perspective, or we're blocked. In Samuel's case, it was grief that prevented him from seeing David as the anointed king. We too have hurts and wounds and preconceived slights and problems. Sometimes someone did something to us and we haven't been able to let go of it, and it just prevents us from moving on and opening our eyes to the good news that God is giving us. So I think there are some strategies that we need to work on to open our eyes. One is to really acknowledge and to look inward and to do the spiritual work. Where am I still struggling? What are the hurts that need to be healed? What are the biases that I just inherited along with my DNA? And how can I come to terms with those, understand them, wrestle with them, and then perhaps set them aside and look at the world in a new way? How can I also begin to see in each human being a wonderful creation of God? The Jewish theologian Martin Buber in the early 20th century wrote a very important book where he said, we are conditioned by society to think of ourselves in relationship to other people and things in what he called an I-it relationship. These other people and these other things exist only for our use, only for our benefit. We tend to look at them in a transactional way. What can I get out of you? How can I use you to get what I want? You know, I think of people who only know how to network, but never can go deeper in relationships and find real meaning and depth and companionship and understanding. Instead, Buber said, we need to have I-thou relationships where we see other people in the depth of their humanity and accept them for who they are. If we can practice that, he said, we can begin to be transformed in our relationship with God as well, the ultimate I-thou relationship. And in being transformed, we can come to have love and affection for the whole world, for everyone in it. We can be transformed and enlightened to be people of love and acceptance. And he said, if we all can do that, what an amazing transformed world this could be. I give thanks for the blind man who was able to see more clearly than the Pharisees. I give thanks for Samuel, that faithful prophet who was willing to be corrected by God and to begin to look in a new way. And I pray that we might be able to do the work that God gives us to do, to wrestle with the blinders that we have, begin to take them off, and to see the miracle that God has given us every day in this beautiful world and in the people and relationships into which He has called us. Amen.